And a very good morning to you. It is 6 minutes after 10 o'clock. Let me apologize for the late start of the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. You can reach us at 4341790, 266-IVOB. That's our WhatsApp number. Or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. We'll be going until 1 o'clock today. And we do invite you to share your concerns, exchange ideas, and let's have a chat on this, the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello? Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am, good morning.
Hi, good morning. My name is Charmaine Roland Bowen, and I am the president of the Barbados Bird Safety Association, as you would know.
Mm-hmm.
I have a number of things that I would like to bring to the fore this morning. I am going to try to be calm. I am now a full Christian, and I am a humble person. I'm not going to be aggressive. I'm going to say it as it is, in a calm, respectful way.
Mm-hmm.
There are some things that have me a bit annoyed, but I will start with the least most important one first. In the past, we have had a number of incidences where persons fell from the back of trucks. I bring up this one now because, you know, we are entering into the crop over season, and that is something that happens quite often over the years. During crop over, you know, a number of incidences occurred where persons fell from the back of trucks. My peeve is that I don't understand if a practice is dangerous for there to have a law against it. And just because you get permission, it is not dangerous anymore. And, you know, it can be allowed to happen. But my take on that is I am appealing to persons who will be doing that, engaging in that, to be vigilant, make sure that they're not on the back of trucks after drinking alcohol, make sure that they are careful and that they are secured. We don't need another incident to that magnitude. That is one. The second one is...
Before you move off of that one, Charmaine, yesterday... in conversation with someone, I said to them, you can't legislate nonsensical behavior. And I recalled an incident where a young lady had her leg through the window of a moving vehicle and gyrating and walking alongside it by the stadium. Now, there's no way you could legislate that kind of behavior, okay?
Mm-hmm.
With one leg on the ground and one leg through the window of a SUV. Now, the thing is, however, the back of trucks one in particular. We had an incident some years ago on what is now the lift bridge, where there was a bit of iron hanging from the arch so that only vehicles of a certain height would be able to go through. And a guy who was standing on the back of a vehicle went there and, you know, lost his head. So, you can't legislate every type of behavior that there is on the road. However, the one on the back of trucks is particularly worrying to me because I don't know how there's any way that you can say it's safe to do it. The back of a vehicle, especially double cabs, sway, sometimes because of driver speed, sometimes because of road conditions. It's a bouncing, moving... It's a dangerous place to be. Full stop. Yeah.
Right, so I definitely would like persons to look into that.
Does insurance cover it?
I am not sure.
That's my point, because as far as I know, those vehicles usually have on the doors, license for four passengers. Exactly.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
the question is a person sitting in a tray covered? The insurance, I guess, will have to tell us that. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, I want to continue... with the tax, you know, paying the road tax at the pump,
mm-hmm.
right? As you would have seen in the media, you know, we did come out, the association did come out and in favor of it because we see a number of benefits, not only for the particular driver, but also for road safety as well and for the environment. We see it as a fair tax, you know, because you pay by what you use and... persons, drivers have control over how much road tax they pay or how much tax they pay, because you can choose not to use your vehicle. Sometimes we have people going overseas and their vehicles, you know, are in the garage, you know, they're not using it, and you still have to pay that amount of road tax, substantial amount. Some persons pay $1,600 and they only go to the supermarket and to church. Some people just go to work. You know, and so I mean, it is, I see it as a fair, you know, you can make a number of stops in one trip so as to capitalize on the amount of gas, you know, that you would have to purchase for your vehicle. Yes, I know we're going to have some complaints. People say that their work, and it is going to be an expense to them. But when they work on the road, they're up and down on the road, they contribute to the wear and tear of the road. Some of them cause the potholes and so on. They contribute to the pollution in the atmosphere on the road by being on the road so much. So if they have to pay for years, persons have been paying and not using their vehicle for that amount of money. I pay $1,600 a year, and it is going to ease me a lot. And I don't have to look for that in a lump sum now. I paid in installments, so that is another good point for it. Every person on the road now is covered with road tax. Sometimes you get into a collision only to find out that person does not have road tax, and then they're going to be telling you have to take it to the civil court. So right now, you know, we have gotten rid of that problem. The insurance now, they can probably put a disc, you know, on the vehicle, proving that this vehicle is insured. So, I mean, that is another way you can utilize the removing of one disc and put another. Greener economy. You know, the less vehicles we have on the road, you know, the less pollution out there. From road safety, the less congestion would be out there, the less aggressive driving would be out there. Also, the less accidents. You know, because you don't have so many vehicles out there, people are not as frustrated, they're not creating accidents. So I see it as a way also that it can reduce accidents. But what I want to really get into this morning is I would like to see also that some of the funds that are raised, you know, go back into road safety to improve the lighting conditions on our roads, especially areas where there are pedestrian crossings on our highway that are not lit. It is difficult to see pedestrians, especially, you know, when you're approaching these pedestrian crossings. So if you have darkness on your highway, make sure one place, you know, if you only have money to purchase lights for one place, make it the pedestrian crossing. Because we don't want any, you know, near misses or near hits. So I would like to see some of the funds go back into light, go back into debushing the highway, go back into marking the lanes properly, go back into marking the pedestrian and lighting the pedestrian crossings and so on. But the real reason I called this morning, too, is there's a grave concern with the number of fatalities we're having on our roads. Not only fatalities, but serious accidents, as everyone can see. We have had 7 deaths in 8 days. In 8 days, 7 people lost their lives. I see this as a priority because I don't see anything more important than a life. And the thing is about it, they can be prevented. We voted at our polls, you know, we voted for change. We want change. We need change, especially in, I am advocating for my area. Okay, other people can advocate for what they feel is priority in their areas, but in my area, nothing is more important than a life, losing a life taken. And in most instances, most of these people that are killed, they're healthy people. They don't have diseases, you know, they don't have cancers, diabetes. They're in you know, they're healthy people that their lives are taken from them. We have tried, I should say, everything in Barbados to stop these accidents except what the correct one.
Which is?
When I say that, I was made, I saw they're talking about doing a road safety audit, which I, in my belief, that is good. You know, we need to make sure that the roads, the delineation, the curvature, and all those things are good on the roads, the potholes and everything. We need to do that. Don't get me wrong. But if you look at the causes of accidents, 85% of the cause of accident is driver error. 10% is the road, the layout of the road, the infrastructure, the delineation, blah, 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 blah. And 5% is the vehicle. So if you only want to go on target 10%, why not target the 85% where you would get a bigger return? It would benefit
because more.
Because
driver error is too wide an area to be covered. What's the definition of driver error?
Okay. The driver not doing the right thing.
Good. And how do you correct that?
Yes, I'm going to tell you. Mm-hmm. We have tried almost everything. But the only thing, if you check back, you will find that we have never went the route of educating our drivers. We teach our drivers to pass a driving test by teaching them skills, reverse, three-point turn, going around a corner. That is what we teach them. We need to teach them the values. We need to teach of being safe on the road. We need to teach them if you drink a bottle of alcohol, you can't go and get behind that car. It's a danger. If you drive and use the cell phone, it is a distraction. You are going to get into an accident. If you speed, because in most instances, all of these speeding, it is about people, these fatalities, it is about speed. Because the human body can only take a certain amount of force before it succumbs to its injuries. And you get that force on impact. When it's an impact, you know, all of that force is transferred to the human body, and the frailty of our body, you know, we cannot withstand, and it comes by excessive speed. So we need to educate drivers to the dangers of speed. We need to educate them to the dangers of driving when you're tired. So all of these comes in education.
Ma'am, you don't think they know that?
I can't guarantee that they know that.
And you guarantee? And how are you going to guarantee that they'll learn it then?
Listen, Dennis. It is not going to be, because each and every one of us, we feel that we are a safe driver. We know how to drive, how to handle our car. A vehicle driving every day, some person drinking alcohol and getting home or speeding, and nothing happens. It only takes one time. It only takes one time to done you or to done somebody else. So you don't want that. So if you feel that your abilities is so good, you don't need educating, it's always the other person or the other idiot.
How do you perceive to teach them then?
But that's what I'm getting at. They don't feel it. So we don't have to educate you because you know everything.
No, how do you, ma'am, I ask you, how do you plan to educate them?
Okay, there are four ways in which they can be educated. Let me start from the bottom. People going in, persons going in for new drivers going in for licenses. It needs to be a part of the education component, need to be a part of it. Persons going before the magistrate's court for violations, they need to be educated towards the dangers of their actions, not just fine, because they can go and go back and do it. They need to be educated, because some people do these things because they don't know the dangers involved. Because if you're doing something and you get away with it, you're not going to see the danger in it. Insurance companies, when they have drivers that have at fault collisions especially, they need to stop covering up. I know that is what an insurance policy is all about. You pay us your money and we take the blame for you. You know, we pay out your damages and so on. That's what insurance is about. But really, we need to start in making sure that those persons are educated to the faults, to the risks that are out there, so that they would know. It's all a matter of choice, you know, so that they would know the dangers and that they would go and do the right thing. Because we cannot put laws there and say, and expect persons also to buy into these laws unless they know the real dangers. That's where we would get the value.
Ma'am, you've said some things. You've said some things. Go ahead.
All right. And then companies. We have a number of persons out there, you know, employers that have people who drive for work. They need to accept the responsibilities and put policies and procedures in place as it pertains to persons driving their vehicle, because a vehicle is a moving workplace. It's a moving workplace. And we have cell phone laws. We have drink driving laws. And so on. So, I mean, they need to update their policies, educate their persons on the dangers of driving distracted, because when persons go there, especially they're using the company phones and getting calls and making calls with these company phones, the employer, it should also be liable because they give the permission. So they need to go back to the table. They need to put policies in place, because people who drive for work spend a tremendous amount of time out there on the road, and they interact with innocent road users like me. You understand? So they need to be sober. They need not to be impaired. They need to know the dangers of speed. We have vehicles that have a speed limit of 50, and you see them traveling at 80. The speed limit that it is at the side of the road is not, and I repeat, it is not for everyone. It is for cars and motorcycles. That is what that speed limit is for.
Ma'am, let me say to you, let me say a couple of things to you, okay? You've made some statements about insurance companies and companies and their vehicles, and I gotta say a couple of things. One, insurance companies have, over a period of time, tried to get persons to understand some of the dangers you've outlined and to change their driving habits. There, I think programs have been introduced to try to
let me hear some of them, Dennis. I want to hear some of them. Let me hear some of them. I ain't talking about people signing a pledge. You know, I know people going to get vexed. Me, I ain't talking about people signing a pledge. A pledge is nothing. It's only pieces of words on the paper. You got to show the people what they need to do. You have to educate them to the dangers. You have to let them know, because there are natural forces out there that command your vehicle. Don't care how good you feel a driver you are. There are natural forces that play against your vehicle. There's the center of gravity. A lot of these trucks, a lot of these SUVs, the people don't know how to control their vehicles. In these instances, there's centrifugal forces and so on out there that command, you know, that override your ability to maneuver a vehicle. All of this is not in a pledge. You're going to be just vague. You're going to be too subjective, you know, in these drive safely, do this, do that. You need to educate. We have never educated our people to use the road. Never. We need to go that road. If you look at the developed countries that have low rates, accident rates and so on, then they have... Education is a major part of it, of their reaching their goals. You have to educate persons. How are you going to enforce the law? You bring about a law, want to enforce this law without educating people about the same law. You need to, if you want to buy in, because we know that we cannot just wait on police, because there are not enough police officers out there. So we know have to appeal to the people's morals, you know, to their senses, you know, because education is the only way that we're going to influence attitudes and bring about the required behaviors that we want. So don't tell me that insurance companies do this.
Ms. Bowen, let me say to you that I'll not tell you anything for the rest of the program. You do have an enjoyable day. Thank you very much for your input, because I'm trying to talk to you and you don't want me to tell you, so I won't. This is Dr. Brastax. Good morning.
Good morning, Mrs. Johnson. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, sir. And you?
Yeah, a couple of things here, Mr. Johnson. I listened to Lily Justin, but I don't want to go into great depths. If you, Mr. Johnson, you have a car, you pay your road tax, $400 per annum, right? Now you go to work. You live in a place that's too far from your workplace, and you do it actually driving on Sellotape. So I mean, might be a little picnic down East Coast Road, but normally $50 in gas is you normally put in every week. But you pay $400 in road tax. At the end of the month, you'll be paying $200. So therefore, at the end of the year, you will actually spend around $2,400, which is much more than what you pay in your road tax. So I think Ms. Boyne have to learn to do her math. The other thing is that when you pay your insurance for 1 year, this is what is going to happen now. You don't have to pay no more road tax. So a fellow would just say, look, I didn't pay my insurance for 1 year, and after that year, that's the end of that. So you will have more people now driving boat without car insurance. Some of the driving boat without any insurance at all, car insurance and license. So when a fellow hit you from behind, he's not going to wait. Are you? He's going to go along. And when you check the number of the license plates, it's a false number.
Can I answer you, sir?
Of course, at least
talk to you?
Of course.
Okay, let me talk to you for a minute here. Here's what you do, sir. You ensure that every time you pay the insurance on your car, you are issued with a license plate that is colored and has a date on it, as it done in other countries. So for 2018, the license plate for M50 will be a blue license plate, M50 on it, with the date 2018 up in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's payable by the 31st of January of every year.
Yes.
So when you see M50 on the road, and it is 2020, and the license plate is now orange, but it still has M50 on a blue license plate that says 2018, it is illegal, and you take that person off the road. That is what is done. It's put on the insurance, and the license plate is issued to the person who owns the number and pays the insurance. So you have no uninsured cars on the road, because it is very easy to spot a blue license plate with 2018 up in the corner, as opposed to an orange one saying 2015.
Yes,
okay, that's number one. So that takes care of your no insurance on the road.
Right.
Let me move to the road tax. Mm-hmm. A tax is a tax is a tax, okay? Let's get that straight. So you have people in Barbados paying road tax, and the road tax does not do anything for the road. It goes into the consolidated fund and is used for whatever we want to use it for. To pay salaries, to fix the QEH, to do whatever, to fix the mess on the South Coast. It's not used for the road, although it's called a road tax. So here's what the countries have done. They have said, if gasoline is $3 per liter, 5 cents of that $3 is going to go to a fund to fix the road. So it is assigned to a name called road tax. 75 cents goes to the government in revenue for the consolidated fund that's used for general purposes. Mm-hmm. $2 goes to this, 5 cents goes to the operator. So you pay $3 at the pump, but it's allocated in that manner. It is called the allocation of resources, and it's done post you paying for it. So this thing you're all trying to raise about if I drive on the East Coast and if I walk and take a bicycle is nonsense. I want to talk for a minute. Mm-hmm. And then you could tell me all you want to tell me.
Yes.
Thirdly, the administration of managing the road and what we do with it, which is what I was trying to tell the lady, we could educate people all they want. They don't sometimes put the education into practice, which is the problem that we have. So it is not a matter of simply educating people as to what you plan to do with road tax, what you plan to do with insurance, but in getting them to understand what it is you're doing. That calls for communication. And hopefully, having established a ministry for information and having a government information service, I won't have to explain it to you. Go ahead.
Yes. Let me go back again. I am going to go through very slowly.
Okay. You could. Yeah. I don't.
I am paying $400 per annum in road tax.
And it's not going to fix the road, which is my point.
I'm not interested in that part.
You're not?
Let me explain myself first. I'm paying $400 a year in road tax. That's what you pay, right?
Good. Right. Mm-hmm.
But now they're going to remove the road tax. Right. But I am paying now $50 a week in gasoline. Mm-hmm. I'm asking you if at the end of the year, I may not pay more money in gasoline than I will pay in road tax.
No, sir, you are not.
Because I am paying no.
Sir, you are not.
Listen to me. At the end of the week, at the end of the month, I am paying $200 in gasoline.
That's what you're getting, $200 in gasoline
to use in your car. I'm not talking about
your
taxes. I'm talking about, they're saying that the road tax, right, will bring money. You're with me so far. I mean, the tax at the gas pipe. And they say it's going to be cheaper than the road tax. But if you're paying $400 in road tax, it's about the same thing. Because when you were paying the $400 in road tax, you were still paying $50 in gasoline. So it's $400 plus the $2,400. You might get a reduction in that. I see your point. The other right.
Finally.
Yeah.
And I thank you for finally seeing. And this is what I'm talking about, education. If you don't catch what the person is saying, it don't make no sense.
You
understand now, sir?
Right.
Thank you. And that's all I was trying to tell you. You're still paying whatever you're paying. Don't worry about how it's allocated, because it all comes down to allocation.
Right.
Look, the former prime minister, and this is why I keep using this as an example. The former prime minister, the prime minister before last one, Mr. Arthur, let me identify which one, said at one point that he had put a 1 cent tax, a secret 1 cent tax on gasoline to fund the crop over. And nobody knew about the 1 cent tax until it came up, and it funded crop over that year for, I can't remember what the figure was. If Barbadians use, I'm just going to pick a figure, if we use $2 million worth of fuel per year, $2 million, and you take, I don't know, 2% of that for road tax, you see how much you get?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And it don't cost you any more or any less gas going in your car.
Fair enough.
What you're paying is $2 million in gasoline. And you take 2% of that or 1% of that and say, that's going to fix the road as a road tax. You're still driving your car. You're still paying the same amount. It's just that a portion of that $2 million, rather than going in the consolidated fund, is being assigned the name road tax. That's all.
But your back thing before we go with Mrs. Johnson and tourism and thing. I heard Jerry Simmons on more one occasion say that the tourists are spending less. Let's assume, Mr. Johnson, you had a bar at a beach. A tourist came there, about 50 tourists came there, and about only 5 of them came and buy a rum and coke from you. I spent about 2 hours there, lie down on the beach chairs, and then get back up and go where they come from on the boat. You are going to tell the people now that you always spend, each person only spend about $25 or $50 to you. Will you not try to do things then to make the people want to spend more money?
Yes, sir. The question is, what would you do?
I was checking something. Listen, I was checking something earlier the there, and they said that the rich Asians, they're like no department stores. They're what they want is the culture and the historical experience. That's what they're looking for. They're not looking to kind of to no country to go to the department store to buy things duty free. That's what they're looking for. So that's where the areas we have to concentrate. And the last thing, Mr. Johnson, it's made me the same. Because I seem to be lost. You are living overseas. You are, let's say that you have a $500 million invested overseas. And they might see no come out to Barbados and come and invest your money back in Barbados. But you, let's say that you have your $500 million invested in Bahamas, right? You are getting a big lot of interest on your money. Oh, am I going to convince you to bring that money back to Barbados? That's the point there.
The only way you could convince people, sir, to move their money around, and if you've listened to me when I've been engaging people on this, I often refer to the Jamaica situation where, in order to bring down the Manley administration, Jamaicans were encouraged to take their money out of Jamaica and invest it in Miami. Yeah, and when the government changed and Mr. Siaga said, all right, bring it back now. Sorry, Mr. Not Siaga. His name will come back to me. When he said bring it back, people asked why. We were getting enough, you know, if you want a few US dollars, we bring it back to you. The challenge always is, what do you promise people as their return on their investment? You see, if Miami is going to offer you 3.5% or 5% on your money, and if you have to pay Uncle Sam taxes, but I tell you, if you bring it back, I've given you 25 years tax-free or 50 years tax-free and duty-free concessions and this and that, and you can see it making you more money, they'll come back with it. The question is what you offer them. So the movement of money in and out of a country for investment purposes depends on two things: the climate and the person's belief that you will deliver on what you say they'll deliver, and they'll make more money off of you. Because there are people, I mean, let's look at the Clico as an example. Mr. Dupre invested in property in Miami that fell apart. So there's no guarantee that because you invest money in Miami or the U.S. or Dubai or somewhere that you'll make money.
That is true.
It's a risk.
Right. So when you come back to Barbados now, Mrs. Johnson, I used to say, look, after the first 2 years, things ain't looking so good. Do you go back to the central bank or the government and say, I stay back on my money? So the money will be in and out like a swing salary.
Well, look at the South Coast over the last 5 years, sir. We had large investors from overseas who promised to set up, you know.
All sorts of things,
yeah. And what happened to them? They're sitting there. They follow in court for something. Another person charged somewhere, you know, and it's sitting there.
But before I go, do you believe that a military person is capable of managing a hospital? No, I'm going to ask you something.
Hold on. I know what you're getting at. Sir,
yes.
A minister is responsible for policy.
That's right.
Policy is devised by speaking to people who know what they're doing, and you shape the policy, and they execute it.
Right.
If the minister, being a military person, knows how to gather intelligence, how to put it together, how to assign people to tasks, and how to make sure that they do it, Who knows? He may be a successful minister of health. I am not one of those people who believe that a doctor should be a minister of health or that a teacher should be a minister of education. I don't believe that.
Right, you're right, because it used to be so in the one time, to be a minister, you have to be a doctor.
I don't believe so.
But let me tell you something. If you look at it that way, and you had to look at Iraq, for example, where you had think tanks issues in the United States, with a plan, the strategic planning, you can't call the invasion Iraq a strategic planning, because what happened when you what happened next?
Sir, hold on a minute.
That's the problem I have with that.
You want me to give you the answer to that one, too? Because
yes,
I can give you the answer to that one, too.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Because the gentleman who devised the policy didn't listen to his advisors.
Thank you very much, sir. Have a nice day.
You too, sir. This is Dr. Brastax.